afternoon. So for those of you who maybe weren't with us last night, my name's Diane Tower, and I'm the immediate past public health fellow at the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice. So I'd like to thank APMA also for their support over the years and also just to be here today with you. So really what I'd like to do today is share with you my experiences over the past year. One of the big projects that I did for my capstone presentation at the Dartmouth Institute for my Master's of Public Health was looking into specialty clinic access, specifically podiatric specialty clinic access, at a community health center that I worked at when I was a resident. So I have no commercial disclosures, but I did want to let you guys know that during my time there at TDI, I was funded by APMA, but had no extra financial assistance or anything like that in doing this particular project. So the objectives for today, I just wanted to discuss with you the role of community health centers, especially with the changing healthcare setting, and specifically the specialty care access in this particular setting. Again, most specifically, I'm going to talk to you about my experiences performing this microsystems approach and clinical evaluation at a community health center in Northern Colorado. So community health centers were designed in 1965 to help try to reduce some of the disparities that affect specific populations, those minority groups, impoverished and uninsured Americans. They provide a safety net of care and certainly help us provide care to the disadvantaged populations of our country. They're the medical home to about 5% of the United States population, and that relates to about 20 million people. So these safety net providers do a great job of trying to support and provide comprehensive services to their patrons, and most specifically, they treat patients with lots of chronic conditions and try to help medically manage these people and provide them with some sort of assistance, lots of assistance programs in terms of transportation, also medication, trying to gain access to medications. So now with the passing of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act in 2010, a lot of insurance exchanges have been popping up, lots of talk about this, and what they're noticing is that we're going to have a huge increase in the population that's going to be gaining their services from community health center type of settings. Now the big concern is with this influx of patients and patrons to community health centers is their overall capacity. And one of the main tenets of this is really specialty care. So podiatric specialty care is one of the services that some community health centers may not provide at this point in time. So that's one of the services that there was at the community health center that I worked at, and that was one of the things that I wanted to look more into. One of the concepts is that off-site medical specialties or surgical specialties such as podiatry, you may have a very hard time getting these community health center patients actually out into the community to see these community providers. So they're going to have difficulties accessing this care, which can lead to increased worse outcomes, morbidities, really significant issues, and medical legal risks. One of the ways to bypass this is to actually provide on-site specialty care services such as podiatry. And that's what this particular community health center has been doing in the past. And you know, we came up with this challenge and roadblock of trying to get patients into the clinic in a timely fashion. One of the things these safety net providers really should focus on is maintaining their financial stability while they're able to increase capacity in some way. With a lot of the financial shortcomings of some of these community health centers and their very financial difficulties that they may be going through. So in doing this project, using the clinical microsystems approach that we talked about in a lot of our quality improvement classes, is really getting down to the smallest functional unit at a particular setting. So if you can imagine very large community health centers, close to 30 family practice or internal medicine providers, really just focusing on the one podiatry-specific clinic. So being able to look at that and really understand their performance, how that particular microsystem actually works, what are some of the processes that they go through, So you can identify these areas, the need for change, measurement strategies, and some sort of process redesign to try to improve this particular system. So when using the clinical microsystem approach, what we end up doing is using the 5P approach. And you'll see in this picture the 5Ps here that we'll go through together, starting off with the purpose, so identifying the main purpose of that particular small clinical microsystem. Who are the patients that are frequenting? Who are the professionals that work in the setting? If there's any processes that you're interested in, and then what are the patterns that come out of this analysis? So just a little background, Sunrise Montfort Family Clinic is a small community health center that's located in the northeastern plains of Colorado in Greeley. So that's where I did my residency program. And this particular clinic is a clinic that we work as residents in our resident-run clinic during residency. And what we identified was the challenge that we were seeing with trying to get patients in a timely manner. So in April 2013, when I started my data collection, the wait time for a non-emergent podiatry referral was about 7 months. So we're there for about half a day a week, usually in the mornings. And then as a result of this, we ended up having to increase our time to one full day a week. When I surveyed the staff and the administration at the clinic, they told me that 1 to 2 months was a more reasonable time for a non-emergent issues. So they wanted to be able to get their patients in a much shorter time period. So this was the initial thought of let's look at this clinical microsystem and really try to get an understanding of how they work, how they function, so that we can try to reduce the 7 month wait time to something a little bit more reasonable. So the overall goal of this project and this evaluation was really to identify what could this particular clinic, Sunrise Montfort Family Clinic, do to improve their podiatric specialty care access. So I started off by applying to the Community Health Center. They have a research participation agreement. So I started off by doing some paperwork and meeting with their chief executive officer, who was there when I was a resident. And I shared with her the challenges that we had in residency, and she was certainly aware of these. And, you know, she really wanted to do well by her patients as well in the community so that they could receive the care that they needed. I signed a confidentiality agreement about patient records, and I was given on-site electronic medical record access. So when I did visit, I was able to get on their health system and get some more information about the patients that were on my list. So, and again, I didn't receive any financial support from either APMA or the clinic itself to do the evaluation. So I visited the clinic twice in the spring of this year while I was traveling back to Colorado. And what I ended up doing was I spent one of the times while I was there not participating in the clinic at all, but really discussing things with some of the key stakeholders. On the second visit, I ended up going back and actually just observing one of the four-hour morning sessions that the residents were participating in to try to get a better idea, kind of the fly on the wall, of how their clinic actually was running at the time. I surveyed several providers, not only podiatry providers, but also some of the family practice providers who do refer their patients to us. A lot of the administrators, the staff members who were involved with the podiatry clinic, and also 9 patients who were there on that particular day. And again, during my first visit, I had lots of time to have one-on-one interviews with several of the key stakeholders. So really anybody who had been in touch with the podiatry clinic specifically, all the way up to the CMO. In addition to the qualitative survey collection and discussions with my interviewees, I did some quantitative analysis. So from January 2012 through March of 2013, I did a chart audit on all of the patients who had been referred to the podiatry clinic, which gave me an N of 203. And just to get a little bit deeper information, I ended up taking the weekly appointment lists for several weeks, so 13 weeks at the early stages of this particular year, and really just honed in a little bit more on what their conditions were and some of the more specific things in regards to no-shows and cancellations that I could get from some of the weekly appointment lists. For the qualitative surveys and interviews, I pooled all the responses and tried to identify some themes. And then for the quantitative analysis, I used a statistical process control, bar, and column charts. Right into results. So the first of the P's that we'll go through is the purpose. So the purpose of this overall clinic, after I pulled all of the surveys and the discussion notes, was that there were really two purposes. One of them is to provide on-site, patient-centered, comprehensive podiatric care to patients who would not otherwise have access to this care. And the second is to train podiatric physicians in their residency. So again, it's a resident-run clinic. There's no direct podiatric attending oversight, so it's really an opportunity for the residents to be able to have their own patient lists and really manage what they're doing. So the next P of this analysis is patients, and I've highlighted several things here, the things that I felt were most pertinent. So a majority of patients were less than 40 years of age, a majority were Hispanic, and a majority... Is it working? Yes.
Check, check, check.
Can you guys hear me okay, though?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. We have such a small group here, I guess. It's okay. All right, so then you'll notice a huge proportion, close to 95%, are actually living at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. About 45% of them speak a language other than English as their primary language. About 17% are migrant or seasonal workers. There's a very large Somali population that lives in northern Colorado. There's a very large meatpacking plant and organization that's in that area, and so there's a very large Somali population. And then about 7% of our patients have diabetes. Still looking at patients, their insurance status, about 49% are publicly insured, 45% are uninsured and have some sort of sliding scale agreement with the clinic, and then about 6% are privately insured. So of these patients, still thinking about the second P of our 5P analysis, thinking about the referrals, so the primary care physicians are referring these patients to the podiatry group, and you'll see here this Pareto chart shows that a majority, it's actually almost 75% of our referrals are for only about six different reasons. So those kind of fall into the generalized leg, ankle, foot, or toe pain, diabetic foot evals, patients with heel pain, wounds, presence of a wound, some sort of routine nail care, and then patients with flat foot. So a majority of our patients actually only have a handful of conditions. So during this process, what I ended up having to do was categorize the types of referrals. So this was something that had been done, not formally, but pretty informally, in terms of the residents educating the medical assistant in terms of if a patient gets a referral for X, Y, or Z, how soon do they need to get into the clinic? So what I did with this, for this particular analysis and project, is that I actually grouped a lot of those into these categories. So I created the categories of emergent, urgent, and elective, and really tried to talk with the residents and talk with the medical assistant and really try to put some of these in the appropriate categories. So, for example, a patient with a blister or a wound in a diabetic patient, or actually any type of wound, those patients were considered emergent. And what that meant is they got the very next appointment possible. If they could come in that day and we were there, then they would come in. If not, they'd be scheduled for the very next week. So then emergent would be immediately, and then urgent would certainly be given priority over patients with elective, but they would be kind of put to the top of the referral list to try to get an appointment. Now the next P that we'll talk about are professionals. So just a little bit of background about the professionals. You'll see a number of them in this picture. So this is the facility itself. There's six volunteer providers, so all the residents. There's two per year at this particular three-year program, so that's six. And the program has been supplying these volunteer providers since 2006. So we have a long-standing relationship with this community health center, and also the support of our medical students. We always have two medical students that are with us, so there's the potential for both of them to be there on any given week. And then we have one traditionally consistent medical assistant. We have one medical assistant who works a lot with a lot of the specialty providers, and that particular person is usually the same medical assistant that is with podiatry at all times. So the next P is that of process. And the process that I was most interested in and really trying to understand a little bit better was the referral process. So what I did was I went and talked with primary care and also the patient navigator to try to determine how a referral is actually generated. So what happens in the community health center is the patient's being seen by their primary care, and the primary care provider decides that this patient needs a podiatry referral. So what happens is the primary care provider then places the referral in the electronic medical record, and that then goes directly to this person that's a patient navigator. So this patient navigator then compiles the list of all the podiatry referrals, and actually all the specialty referrals for that matter, but she takes all of the podiatry referrals and gives this list to the medical assistant, to our podiatry medical assistant. It's then up to that medical assistant to decide whether that referral is considered emergent and whether that patient should be seen right away. So if it is emergent, the medical assistant will then create the appointment for the next available slot for this patient. And if it's deemed something other than emergent, this patient then will sit on the referral wait list where you saw they would likely sit for about 7 months before they were able to be seen and fit into our clinic. So this is the delay point here in the process as to where patients usually sit for a long period of time. Then when an opening does become available and that patient is at the top of the referral list, they will then be scheduled and subsequently seen in our clinic. The last P that we'll talk about is that of patterns. And some of the things that we noticed from the process and just the things that go on is that there's a high return patient volume. So any particular week of the clinic, which we'll see in just a few minutes, there's a huge proportion of patients that are seen each week that are follow-up patients, some even on a weekly basis if they do have wounds. So we're having to fit a high volume of patients on a weekly basis, trying to fit them in, which leaves very little room for the new patients to come off of the referral wait list. There was an overbooking practice of about 25%. In this particular population, there was a high rate of cancellations and no-shows, and so we were having to overbook about 25% just to keep our providers busy while they were there. One of the other patterns as to maybe why there was a high return patient volume is that there were no real standardized guidelines for the residents to follow in terms of having patients follow up. So if you had a patient with, you know, a fracture, a short leg cast, some residents might have them back in 2 weeks, whereas others might wait 3 or 4 weeks to see that patient back. So, you know, the sooner you have them back, the more space those patients are taking up for potential new patients. And then also there was very little communication between the clinic itself and our providers. The residents are only there about half a day a week, maybe sometimes 1 day a week, and we're there without any attending podiatrist, and so we're just kind of there in our own little world doing our own thing, and there wasn't a lot of indication and communication from the clinic manager or the CMO in terms of our performance. We actually were very, you know, not very aware. Some of the residents were not very aware of how long it was actually taking to get patients in because they're not part of that process. So moving on from some of the more qualitative analyses with the five P's, I wanted to share with you guys some of the more quantitative things that came of this. So these are XMR charts, so statistical process control charts that are looking at the referral wait time. So these are in days, so the y-axis is days, and it's for each particular month. So what I did was I took the categories, the emergent, urgent, and elective categories, and I put them on the same y-axis. So what you'll notice is, if I can get my mouse up here, what you'll notice is the emergent list, you know, these are very, very close to the bottom, so they're very, very short wait times. For the other two, that's getting up into the, looks like 140 days and such. So this upper limit here is about 140 for both urgent and elective. So you can see these averages just by the look of them. The emergent, they're getting them in very quickly because they're recognizing the need for these patients to get in very early. So this is the same information, just a little bit different way of looking at this. And so you'll notice for the emergent, it's a much shorter wait time on average and also a much narrower range in terms of how many days these patients are waiting. I also looked at, these are P charts, so these are looking at proportions. And what I looked at was the number of referrals that were completed within a 30-day time period. So if you look at all of the referrals, about 40% were completed within a 30-day time period. But when I parsed out and just looked at the emergent referrals, that's about 96% on average. 96% of the emergent referrals were being seen within 30 days. And if you think about 30 days, that's four clinic sessions for the residents. They're only there once a week. So, you know, again, the clinic was doing a good job in trying to get the emergent referrals in. It was just a matter of doing something else so that we could try to get some of the urgent and elective, more elective types of patients in. So something else that I noticed through some of the 203 referrals that I did have access to was that the new referral generation was about 4.7 per week, and the residents were only seeing about 3.3 new patients per week. So there's still that disconnect there. There are more patients being referred to them, and they can't really see enough new patients to keep up with that. So there are more referrals being generated per week than they were actually being able to see the new patients. So this is looking at appointment status. So we have return patients in the green and new patients in the blue. And this is on a weekly basis, so you can see high rates of return patients in those green bars. So just not a lot of room for the new patients to be seen. This one's actually really interesting here. So we have all patients on the left and new patients on the right. So I tried to take this out a little bit farther. And you'll see the canceled in blue and the no-show in orange. So we have high rates, anywhere from 15 to almost 40% in all patients, and close to and sometimes reaching 50% of new patients. So patients who are scheduled and they're new to our clinic, they were more likely to either cancel their appointment or just completely no-show to their appointment. Now the other interesting thing that we noticed, some of us as we were there working, you know, we only had a one provider schedule. And basically what a one provider schedule is just there's enough patients booked that if you were just one sole provider, you could see all of them yourself. Okay, but what I found was that there were on average over three providers in clinic during this particular 13-week session. And for over 75% of the clinic sessions, there were three or four providers. So we have a one provider schedule. That means you only need one clinician to do it. And we were having three and four residents, you know, standing around, not really doing a whole lot when we have this huge backlog of patients who are waiting 7 months to see us. And you know, we have all of these instances where we were just, you know, kind of standing there. So going back to the referral goal wait time, so this is something that in the survey, I just wanted to parse this out a little bit more. 81% of the providers, administrators, and staff in this particular clinical microsystem agreed that 1 to 2 months was a much more reasonable wait time for patients to wait. And what was interesting, I had a question on the survey of what did you think the wait time was? What did you believe the wait time was? And only 31% got that right. So only five providers chose the 7 to 9 months. And it was interesting, if you look just next to that, we have eight people here who think it's less than 4 months, 1 to 2 or 3 to 4 months. So that just goes along with the lack of communication from the clinic side to the provider side in our small microsystem in terms of, you know, something needs to be done here. We have a mismatch between what the actual wait time is versus what people think that it should be. So going through all of this data and really trying to understand, I separated this into three sections, the first being referrals. So an area to work on is that referral generation, as long as the number of referrals coming in is higher than the number of new patients that these providers are seeing, we're just going to perpetuate the problem of the long wait time. So there's one thing in particular that we can do, and that's increase the weekly new patient volume. There are several ways that we can do this. So we can try to decrease the return patient volume, try to decrease the number of referrals that are generated, mostly the referrals that are unnecessary, which there were quite a few of those, and also try to increase the appointment slots. Some other things to consider just in terms of data display and communication from the clinic side is really to get some information out there and show the residents and the providers how they're performing and maybe where that miscommunication or lack of communication is really not helping the clinical microsystem perform to its overall capacity. So the second section that I kind of combined and tried to make this about was the staffing. So there are significantly more providers in attendance than the number of provider schedule that was present, which again is just going to lead to the long wait times and providers standing around. So initially and traditionally, it's just been required that at least one provider is there, and typically it's one of the senior residents because there are no attending faculty members there. It's nice to have a senior resident kind of overseeing the clinic. But what's something that could be required in the future is that there's also one first year there at all times. When a first year resident is not on an outside service and they're on podiatry service, they should be expected to be in the clinic as well. That way we can open up at least a 1.5 provider schedule so that there's a third year resident there to mentor and guide the junior resident, and maybe even maybe later in the year when the first year becomes much more integrated into that system, maybe even open up a two-provider schedule to be able to hold that capacity up. There's also the 1,000 clinic encounter requirement by CPME, and something that this particular residency could do is actually try to require a minimum number of patients that should actually come from Sunrise in order to drive productivity while the residents are there. And the final section I chose to focus on was the scheduling aspect. And so if we have so many return patients and high rates of cancellations and no-shows, we really don't have any room for these new patients to come off of that referral wait list in a timely manner. So there were several things here that I thought we could work on, and that's standardize some sort of follow-up guidelines for the residents so that when each resident is seeing a particular type of patient, you know, they can follow up in a number of weeks rather than every provider having their own follow-up schedule. We could also educate the referring providers. A vast majority of these referring providers are actually family medicine residents who are training in a rural medicine program. So, you know, being able to share our skills and knowledge with them is important for them in their futures as well, because they're going to be out there. Maybe they are going to be performing some wound debridements and different things since they're going to be practicing in more rural areas. So it could be mutually beneficial in this setting. Certainly, I chose to let them know that they can consider continuing their overbooking practices. You know, there's talk here even about improving cancellations and no-shows in a community health center. So, you know, hopefully getting in touch with that person, maybe they'll have some insight for me as well. And the categorization that I use for the emergent, urgent, and elective procedures, it's really something that was very informal before, but really like to formalize that with the setting there and make sure the medical assistant is on board with that. And then have a consistent organization of the referral list. There's really no master list anywhere. It's just kind of all by memory from this one medical assistant. So really having some sort of standardization of that in order to honor the temporality of those referrals as well. So just some quick limitations. When I sparsed them out into the smaller categories, there weren't great ends for some of the categories. My referral categorization wasn't used at the time the data was collected, and I had to exclude a few referrals. I couldn't identify diabetes status in a few of them. And then I, as a former resident, was intimately involved with this issue and challenge when I was there as a resident, so I certainly could have biased this evaluation. But just to tie this all together, you know, any of these inefficiencies and things that are going on now with the chance of less capacity for specialty care specifically can really cause some challenges in the future. So trying to identify these and address them now is probably the best idea. So, you know, that was my experience over the last year doing this evaluation and trying to find something to help out this particular community health center. So I thank you guys for being here and for your attention. Does anybody have any questions? Janet?
Comment in terms of obviously applicability of this to other types of practice.
Yeah, and
any of the things that you touch upon, my practice constantly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it was really interesting to be in a situation where we have these quality improvement classes and really, you know, you see these things and maybe you do a little bit here and there and you try to fix the problem each time. But really going back and trying to find the root of the problem is, you know, now I'm finding that there's lots of things that I can recommend to the health center and the residency program to try to get rid of some of these problems for good. Yeah. So thank you guys. And yes, Dr. Edwards. Absolutely. You know, we would actually see patients who came in and we'd say, oh, what are you here for? And they'd say, oh, I had a callus about 9 months ago and somebody else took care of it, but I had this appointment and I was coming. So they end up coming and filling that appointment slot and they don't actually need anything anymore. Somebody else took care of it for them, but by golly, they had that appointment and they were going to come. So that's part of it. They fill that slot, or you're right, they have that appointment, they just don't show. So. And just really quickly before Emily boots me off here and introduces the next speaker, I have something for Dr. Jim DeRuss. I want you to. So I have my capstone here.